Thank you for tuning in. We'll get to your program right after this short word from our sponsors.
When I first went into business, I found out in a hurry that it was lonely at the top. If you're a CEO or business owner and you're feeling lonely at the top, then I'd like to invite you to join us at our Action Coach membership community. It's a community of like-minded business owners that help each other, build each other up, sometimes push and pull each other. If you'd like to learn more, just reach out to me at philgilliland.actioncoach.com, book a session, and I'll give you all the details. Hey there. Welcome to this week's episode of Epic Entrepreneurs, brought to you by Action Coach Growth Partners. I'm your host, Bill Gilliland. And in this podcast, you'll find three things. You're going to hear real stories from real entrepreneurs that will help you along your entrepreneurial journey. You're also going to get business tips to help you scale up faster, and you're going to get actual coaching to help you get better real-world results to be the best entrepreneur you can be. Hey, and if you like the podcast, remember to subscribe. And now, enjoy the show.
Hi there, I'm Mike Bosworth, and I'm coming to you from Orcas Island, Washington, and I'm a retired career sales trainer.
So how'd you get into the business of sales training in the first place, Mike?
Well, I had the good fortune when I graduated from college of getting an entry-level position with a startup division of Xerox in 1972. And this division invented cloud computing. And in 1969, they had a central computer in Los Angeles, 50 local clients, manufacturing distribution companies, some public governments and police departments. And they were all hooked up to our computer with dumb terminals and phone lines doing real-time processing. And they had a job that was too beneath the dignity of their more experienced professionals. And so since I was out of college, I got on the help desk with the red telephone for a year. And then I went out for the next year and met my clients personally. And these are the people I've been talking on the phone with for a year. And most of them, when they met me face to face, said, "Well, gee, Mike, we thought you were taller. I guess I sound taller than I am." But anyway, I did that. And then after a couple of years, my management came to me and said, "Mike, we'd like you to go into sales." And I had two answers, no and hell no. The no was because the clients I'd been supporting for 2 years had virtually all been misquoted on price, and the salespeople told them the product would do things it wouldn't do. So my esteem for the sales profession was pretty low. And then on top of that, the hell no came from the fact that my father was a violent alcoholic and a salesman. So the last thing I ever wanted to do was be like him. So I said no. A week later, they came back and said, "Mike, we'd really like you to try sales, and we'll give it to you in writing. And if you try it for 6 months, you can have your old job back if you hate it." I said, "All right, I'll give it a try." And in my first 5 months on quota, I sold more than anybody in the history of the company sold in a full year. So within another year and a half, they made me a sales manager and a sales trainer. They made me the official sales trainer for Xerox Computer Services. And so the last 6 years I was with them, unofficially, even though I was a marketing manager, branch manager, national sales manager, 4 to 5 weeks a year, I did the sales boot camp. And I loved teaching people how to sell. And so in 1983, I started my own business called Solution Selling. I eventually wrote this book 10 years later. And I stayed solo for 5 years. But people kept saying, "Mike, I want to do what you do." And they were my vice president of sales clients, the people who would hire me to come in and train their B2B sales force. And after that, and they'd participate and I'd teach them how to coach their salespeople. And they said, "I want to do what you do." And so after 5 years solo in 1988, I put together an affiliate agreement where they could use my intellectual property and send me royalty checks. And so in the mid-90s, my organization had grown to 75 people No employees. I never had an employee. It was virtual. And because we were really successful at all preaching from the same hymnal, if you will, and teaching the material the way I wanted them to teach it, in 1995, we trained 15,000 IBM salespeople. And so I ended up making a lot of money. And I sold the business in 1999 because I went through a divorce and it was the easiest way to never have to talk to my ex again. And so I've been independent since then. In 2008, I realized that I still hadn't entirely broken the code for the bottom 80% of sales forces. Even today in most large sales forces, 20% of the people are bringing in 80% of the business.
Absolutely.
And my mission when I started solution selling was to help lift the bottom 80%. And when in 2008, I realized that that number hadn't changed, I had a deep session with myself and I realized the problem was that 80% of humanity, it's not just 80% of salespeople, but 80% of humanity don't have high EQ. They might have high IQs, but they don't have high EQ. And so because they don't have high EQ, emotional intelligence, they struggle with building trust and connecting with strangers. And so in 2008, I started a business called Story Seekers. And we teach the geeks of the world, the B2B salespeople who majored in engineering or finance or computer science, how to emotionally connect and build trust with their prospects using the power of story.
Awesome. Well, I've got a lot to dig into here. So,
all right.
This might take a couple of teams. By the way, I'm one of those geeks, I guess. I was trained in engineering and my first job was in B2B sales. So we have a lot in common here. Let's dig back. I want to go back to the original business that you sold. There had to be some lessons there. I want to talk specifically about your decision to go with affiliates rather than employees. Talk about
it. Okay. All right. Well, when I started my own business, I was very successful as a salesperson, but as I rose into management at Xerox Computer Services, I started getting to see more of the politics and the infighting and the backstabbing. And then I hated the whole budget goat dance every year where they'd make us spend all this time doing our goals and budgets and spreadsheets. And then senior management would push the number down and it was all, you know, a waste of effort. And so when I started my own business, I said, I want to work for myself out of my house. I want to create content, sell and teach. I don't want any HR department. I don't want any important meetings. I don't want to, budget things or quarterly numbers or any of that stuff that came with corporate life. I was done with it. And
It sounds like the lesson to me here is that you defined what you wanted your business to be. You had your rules. And so therefore it led to the idea that if you were going to impact more people, you were going to have to do it through some other method other than employees.
Right. I even had a venture capital company firm come to me and say, Mike, what you're doing is awesome. Let's build a company. As soon as they said company, I said, nope, I don't want to do that.
And yeah.
5 years in 1988, I met an intellectual property lawyer in San Diego, and he says, Mike, you don't have to build a company to make money off your intellectual property. We can license it to other people who are going to start their own training and consulting businesses. And as long as you keep them on the straight and narrow, they'll send you royalty checks, and you don't have to have them as employees. And so that's what.
Yeah, I think licensing is a very attractive model for a lot of businesses to expand, particularly around the, like you say, the intellectual property. All right. So you went through the learning that divorce is not a wealth building strategy.
No.
And moved on from there. So tell us about Story Seekers, and then we'll get into some of your learnings and some of your sales philosophies.
Well, it seemed like for 20 years, my primary client when I was doing solution selling was the VP of sales, who would hire me to come in and train his or her B2B salespeople. And typically 6 months after I'd get a new client, my VP of sales client would usually we even did it face to face over lunch or dinner, and he'd say, "Mike, my top 20% love solution selling, but the bottom 80% quit using it within 2 weeks of the workshop." And that was what I was wrestling with. And in 2008, that's when I finally realized that the true difference between the top 20% and the bottom 80% is the top 20% intuitively know how to build trust and emotional connection. And they have the wisdom, they have the EQ to do so before they take out their discovery questions. And one of the bedrocks of solution selling was discovery questions written by the smartest people in the company for the salespeople. Because one of my issues, as I told you earlier, with the salespeople at Xerox Computer Services is they were making promises the product wouldn't deliver. And so if we have the smartest people in the company author the discovery questions for the salespeople, then the salespeople can shape the buyer to a vision of a solution that the product can actually deliver on. The problem, though, the reason the bottom 80% quit using it within 2 weeks of the workshop was since they did not have the intuitive ability to build emotional connection and trust, they went for those discovery questions too soon. And so even though there were great questions and it's the buyers would, in essence, throw their hands up and say, "You don't know me good enough to ask me all those questions." They were too invasive. And the salespeople hadn't figured out, and neither had I, how to eliminate the discovery resistance that most people have towards salespeople. And after we're done, I'll send you a white paper I authored on discovery resistance. I'll send it to you.
And we'll put that in the show notes. They were going for the marriage at the first
without date. Without the foreplay.
They were going for marriage right away. So yeah. I do think it's a big mistake that sales folks make. So a couple of questions around that. I mean, my experience has been the 20-80 kind of is, you know, and so how do you move some of the 80 into the 20, I guess is the question.
How'd you like to learn from the best? How'd you like to network with the best? How'd you like to be the best? Well, the key to being the best is to hang around with the best and to learn from the best. And we're going to make that possible for you this August in Asheville at the Asheville Business Summit. I want you to stay tuned. We're bringing in speakers from outside. We've got a lot of good events planned. It's going to be amazing. We got more information coming, but if you'd like more info on how you can be involved, how you can attend, or how you can be a sponsor for this event, it's going to be over 350 entrepreneurs in one place, right here in Western North Carolina, in Asheville. For more info or to be a sponsor, I want you to reach out directly to Beth Lemmel. That's L-E-M-M-E-L at actioncoach.com. That's Beth Lemmel at actioncoach.com. We look forward to seeing you there. It's going to be amazing.
Well, and that's where we're using the power of story, because even though the bottom 80%, they don't have that intuitive ability to connect. Well, for instance, if you and I were sitting next to each other on an airplane and we just started to talk and I said, "Bill, what do you do? How would you answer me?"
I help people build businesses.
Can I share a quick story with you about another guy I've been working with who also tells the world that he helps people build their businesses?
Sure.
Pure curiosity. So we teach the engineer, the chemical engineer going out and making a call on another chemical engineer to first stimulate pure curiosity in 10 seconds by saying, "Hey, Bill, can I share with you a story about another chemical engineer I've been working with for the last year and a half?" I've never had anybody in my sales career turn down a peer story.
And yeah, I love it. That's a great lesson. That's a great lesson for you out there listening.
And the first step in any buy cycle is curiosity.
Absolutely. I've always been nosy. Curiosity is the nice way to say nosy.
I prefer curiosity.
Yeah, I do too. Most people do. So, yeah. All right. So that's there now. Now you've got.
So now he says yes to that story. He's now granted me 60 seconds of story time. And now I would tell him a customer hero story about another chemical engineer. Little bit of setting. Main part of the story is what he was struggling with to do his job. Then the aha in the story is when he discovered that our product would give him the ability to simulate the manufacture of new drugs. He decided 18 months ago to give us a shot. And here we are now today. This KPI is better. This KPI is better. And this KPI is better. But enough about me, Bill. What's going on with you? And that story would turn pure curiosity into pure envy. And after 60 seconds, I could pass the torch back to the buyer. And now, because that story led the buyer to a couple of emotional conclusions. First one is, wow, even though this guy's 20 years younger than me, it sounds like he really understands how hard my job is. And it sounds like he has helped one of my peers solve a problem I haven't figured out how to solve yet. And so when I pass the torch, now the discovery resistance is gone. Now they open up, and now they will allow you to ask all those intelligent discovery questions the smartest people in the world and your company wrote for you, because they're not resistant anymore.
Boy, don't you wish you'd come up with that a few years ago?
Well, I was doing it intuitively as a 28-year-old.
Because you were a top 20, but you were a top 20-er.
But it took me years to be able to articulate it and teach it to other people. Because the main problem with top 20% salespeople, they get promoted into management and they crash and burn. Because how do you teach somebody else to do what you did intuitively?
Yeah, it's the old Ted Williams thing. He had trouble teaching people how to hit because he just did it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And they didn't. He said he could see the ball spinning more than others. That's an awesome analogy. Yeah. Quick, give us. We've just got a few minutes left. Give us a couple of your, at least one of your sales philosophies.
Well, my primary sales philosophy is that salespeople should be solution facilitators. And instead of trying to persuade somebody with logic and facts and PowerPoint, to influence them via story. And if you're a leader, you influence your followers. I've trained a lot of ex-West Point and Annapolis graduates who are now out in the business world, and they can't understand why when they bark an order, everybody in the corporation doesn't just follow along like sheep, because they're not military anymore. And so we have to give them a new paradigm of leadership, which is inspiring your followers to follow you, getting them to trust you, showing vulnerability, and using stories to inspire them to volunteer to follow you rather than following you because you outrank them.
Yeah, that's awesome. look, be a facilitator rather than a order giver.
Right, a buying facilitator, a solution facilitator.
I mean, you know, management, is sales. I mean, you must sell your people on doing whatever it is that you would like them or they're supposed to be doing. So,
if you're good at it,
yeah. So, if you had one piece of advice for someone new in sales, what would you give? What would you say?
I would say, don't tell them anything about your product until you have gotten them to connect with you, trust you, and help them visualize how they might solve their problem if they had certain capabilities that they don't have today. In other words, make your product the proof of their vision, not using your product to try and educate them.
Yeah, don't. I call it puking all over them. Don't, you know, vomit all the product knowledge, you know, until they're ready to hear it. Yeah.
Yeah. I call it premature elaboration.
Premature elaboration. I'm going to write that down.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels great to the salesperson, Bill, but it doesn't always meet the needs of the buyer.
Well, they're always, that's, you know, what happens? They get trained in the product.
Yeah.
Or the service. And next thing you know, they're sold on it. They're so great.
Yeah.
They go tell the world and then it just vomit.
Show off. Up and throw up. Yeah.
Yeah. Get it on there. So this has been great. Might need to have you back to kind of get into some deeper stuff.
All right.
Let me ask you, if someone wants more information on Story Seekers or getting in touch with you, what's the best way?
Find me on LinkedIn. I'm really easy to find on LinkedIn. And just connect with me on LinkedIn.
Okay, so LinkedIn, Mike Bosworth, right?
Yep.
Okay, yeah. And I would agree, you're all over LinkedIn. That's awesome. Well, this has been fun. It's been good learning more. I always love to talk to other sales people about selling and about, because we all know nothing really happens in business till something gets sold. So
that's true. That's true.
So thanks for being around.
All right. Thank you, Bill.
Yeah. And until next time, all the best. Hey, thanks for listening to the Epic Entrepreneurs Podcast. Here's three things that you can do. Number one, remember to subscribe to the podcast. It takes very little effort on your part. It's going to help you and your fellow entrepreneurs. Plus, you guys know how it works. The more subscribers we get, the more cool things we can offer to you. Second, to learn more about growing your business, just download my book, The Coach Approach. It's free for you at giftfrombill.com. That's giftfrombill.com. Hey, and if you'd like more info about growing your business and what we can do to help you grow your business, send me an email directly. Just send it to williamgilliland@actioncoach.com. That's my personal email that I read. No one else reads it first. It's not screened. It's my real email. Just send it to me. I can't wait to talk to you. Hey, and until then, all the best.
Thank you for listening. If you liked what you just heard, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and be sure to visit bizradio.us to find hundreds of other engaging conversations, local events, and more.